It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Before we turn to your essential political analysis for this week, I want to tell you about our wonderful partners at The Resident, where all rooms are designed to combine pure comfort with quintessential British style and design. Whether you're escaping to London for a romantic break or visiting the city with friends and family, there's no better place to stay in the heart of the neighbourhood. Without The Resident, you might not get to experience London, and without The Resident, we wouldn't be here on Whitehall Sources. Whitehall Sources, your essential politics podcast, is brought to you in association with The Resident.
So it has been hard, and I'd be denying to say anything other than that. The government is struggling in the polls. People think about national politics. They don't always think about local things. However, when we have been talking to people about local issues, which is what this is about, people are warming towards the Conservative Party.
Hello and welcome to Whitehall Sources for a special Saturday local elections edition, because Kirsty Buchanan and I are massive nerds who like chatting about these things and would chat about them anyway. So we've pressed record and now you can listen in. Hello, Kirsty.
Hi. First question is, how tired are you? Because you've done like lots of nights and early mornings, and you know, every time I turn on my radio, there you are.
Yeah. I'm all right. I've just woken up, actually. About half an hour ago, I finished my latest two-hour top-up. but on Thursday, let me get this. So I woke up at like maybe sort of 7 o'clock Thursday morning, stayed in bed till around 8. And then that was the last proper sleep I had, really. I went and slept in the hotel across from work for an hour and a half. Then did local election results night on air 10 till 3. Then went back to the hotel from 3:30 till 4:30. Probably slept for about 40 minutes. Then got up and did breakfast. Then came home, slept for 2 hours, got up, did a work meeting, had some food, went back to sleep about 7, woke up again at 3, did breakfast on Saturday morning, came home, slept for 2 hours, and here we are. So I think I'm down on sleep.
Well, I mean, chapeau to you. I listened to you this morning, and it wasn't your on the radio, and it wasn't your smoothest performance, I think it's fair to say. But
that's absolutely fair.
But I'd have been a gibbering wreck by then if I'd had that little sleep. So, you know,
well,
plus I'd have been, you've got a right old turning over from Tobias Elwood, for who seemed to be cross that journalists do what journalists do, which is report what politicians tell them, whether it's on or off the record. And I thought you really kept your cool with that, so well done.
Well, thank you.
I would have been tired
and Tobias.
Tired and grumpy, and told him to do one if it be me, but
basically he came on the radio and seemed angry at the Times for putting on its front page the fact that the Tory rebels, who had been kind of plotting to get rid of Rishi Sunak in light of local election results had all sort of gone, ugh, sack that, and sauntered off to the pub yesterday instead of putting in their letters of no confidence. And he was kind of saying, well, you and the Times put this on the front page and then you broadcast it, da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, sorry, no, hang on. The issue isn't with the Times and Times Radio reporting the news. The issue is that the Conservatives can't help themselves from dishing out briefings to newspapers left, right and centre. anyway, I think he came round to that idea in the end.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening,
he did,
by the way.
You're most welcome. He did apologise in the end, but, you know, lobby journalism, which is another, you know, is a posh way of saying anonymous briefings, has been a staple of parliamentary reporting since the 19th century. So I'm not entirely sure why all of a sudden it seems to have got his goat, but it most definitely did. Yeah.
I wonder if it's just in light of a slightly odd feeling in the Conservatives, because they, up until today, and I've said this on the radio as well, this feels like the first weekend in a long time where we've reported Rishi Sunak appears to be safe, as opposed to Rishi Sunak could be on the verge of getting the boot out the door from the Conservative Party. And it feels like they kind of don't know if they're coming or going to an extent. And this is, of course, in light of the local election results, where at the time of recording, we've got 106 of 107 councils declared their results. The Conservatives have lost 469 councillors. So in the context of good night, bad night, where does that number sit?
It sits exactly in expectations, by the way. And these were the expectations set, not by spin doctors at CCHQ, but by, you know, the kings of polling, Thrasher and Rawlings, who said right from the get-go that, the Conservatives were defending roughly 1,000 seats. And if they lost half of those, they could consider it an extremely bad night for them. And thus it has come to pass. However, whilst it's a terrible night for the Tories, it's not terminal for Rishi Sunak. And that was the sort of $64 million question from this local election. Would it have been enough for the rebels to say, OK, up with this, we can no longer put and incredibly subject the nation to yet another leadership contest? And enough has been done, of which we can talk about in a minute, to make sure that that is not a terminal set of results. And similarly for Starmer, whilst obviously an extremely good night for Labour, it's not stellar either. And there are lessons for both parties here. I think the big takeaway for me from this is actually it was kind of protests all round, you know. So on the right, the Conservatives lost quite a lot because they're Conservatives and they've been in power for 14 years and people have had a gutful, or because they're not Conservative enough and they lost, particularly in the Blackpool South by-election, quite a lot to Reform. On the left, Labour lost a fair amount to the Greens and Independents, particularly over its stance on Gaza. And in London, Sadiq Khan has been run a very close race by the Conservative candidate Susan Hall, because quite a lot of those outer borough voters have turned out in protest over ULEZ. So one way or another, everyone was getting a bit of a kicking. And I think the lessons for Labour from that kind of weak flank on the left is you need to be more Labour. The lessons for the Conservatives on the weak flank on the right is you need to be more Conservative. And the lesson for Sadiq Khan is don't slap taxes on hardworking Londoners. So that's my sort of elevator pitch on what I think that 3 days of polling results has told us.
Yeah, and by the way, it has, you know, we love elections, viva democracy, all of that. But why on earth are we here on a Saturday still waiting for some people to deliver their actual results? Oh my word, it's going on a bit. And I get that people work hard at making voting possible and, you know, staffing the polling stations and counting the votes. But holy moly, this is quite a long process. Just to say that as we started recording, the BBC started calling the mayoral election for Sadiq Khan. It looks like a reasonable margin for him, but the numbers are still coming in, so it's difficult to sort of pin that exactly down at this exact moment as we speak. But it looks like Sadiq Khan will be the mayor of London for a third term, which I find quite surprising in many ways, because when you speak to lots of people in London who live here and who work here, they're not massive fans of the sort of situation that London is in, whether it comes to, when it comes to ULEZ, as you mentioned, and crime, the idea that your phone could be hiked out of your hand and you'll never see it again. You know, these sorts of things really play on people's sort of everyday experiences of everyday life. So I find it quite fascinating that Sadiq Khan appears to be all right in this particular election. Is it fair to say, Kirsty, that Rishi Sunak's been saved by the mayors?
Actually, no, I don't think so. Just on Sadiq Khan, I think it might have been a different story had the Conservatives found someone, let's put this politely, slightly more inspiring than Susan Hall as the candidate. She's not a great candidate, is she, to run him a close
left
second.
Left field, yes, ironically, for a Tory.
Just an extraordinarily, frankly, poor candidate. So I think if the quality had been better, maybe the outcome might have been slightly different. Now, mayors, let's talk about the mayoral contest and its impact on Rishi's survival. So obviously going into the local elections, the Conservatives had been spinning that, you know, the real test would be around these two fundamental Conservative mayoral held seats. One is Tees Valley, which is Ben Houchen, and the other is West Midlands Combined Authority, which is currently run by Andy Street. So that was the spin that was going into it. I think kind of Labour allowed itself to get captured by that framework a little bit, which was, in hindsight, a bit of a mistake. You know, actually not even in hindsight, I think that they woefully underplayed Blackpool South. However, so these were seen as the totems. So the minute that kind of Ben Houchen won, albeit with a substantially reduced majority, and lots of people have been quick to point out that, you know, if you repeated the swing against Ben Houchen in parliamentary elections, every single Tees Valley seat, parliamentary seat, would be lost to Labour. So, you know, again, but we come back to this is a comparable election to 2021, where the Tories were a record kind of high, vaccine bouts. And remember those days when people loved Boris Johnson? It was back in those days. So it was a very high watermark. And Ben Houchen got some, some sort of election result that, you know, would make Vladimir Putin happy. It was like 76% or something.
It was really high.
But then, so frankly, the only way was down whether, you know, the political backdrop was favorable. Favorable or not. Nevertheless, a substantial swing, but he's held onto the seat. That was very important. The West Midlands seat, we're still being told, is kind of neck and neck. The expectation is that the Conservative mayor, Andy Street, will hold on to that, but it is a tight run contest. And, you know, the perception is that these two seats will have been the thing that have really swung it for Rishi Sunak, even though neither Ben Houchen nor Andy Street have aligned themselves with Rishi Sunak. They've both very much their own men. They've campaigned very much on their own kind of ticket. And, you know, Tory party, blue colours, all of that, nowhere to be seen in any of their kind of campaign literature. But having said that, they are Conservatives. There's a couple of very interesting points there, though. So they're very different types of Conservatives. You know, Ben Houchen is a very red wall, you know, with all that kind of pertains to kind of conservative. And Andy Street is very, very centrist. So if you're looking for kind of, you know, with a now for the Conservative Party direction, you know, you've got the broad church right there in terms of that. What it does show you, though, is that, you know, personality, the ability to fight for your community, to be seen to stand up for your community, which both Andy Street and Ben Houchen are famed for, matters hugely. And I think, you know, that incumbency has really helped them. But for me, I don't think that's where the mood turned for me. So what tends to, you know, and I've always said, you know, I've never really bought the old idea of local elections being flashpoints for leadership challenges. I've seen too many times this getting talked up and it just not happening. It dissipates because it's messy. It's not binary like a by-election would be. You know, there's too many alternative choices and we'll talk about those in a minute. But for me, the fundamental thing that tends to happen if you're going to start shifting into something that looks like a challenge is some of those Conservative councillors who've worked hard, who fought for their community and lost their seats, they come out and start to blame number 10, start to blame the Prime Minister. Now, significantly, two big council losses for the Conservatives yesterday. One was Thurrock, which is the sort of council that Labour should be winning if it's on track for a general election majority. And the other was Redditch. Both those leaders came out quite early on and neither of them blamed Rishi Sunak. Andrew Jeffries, who's the leader of Thurrock, came out and said that, you know, he expressly said he didn't want Sunak to go, but that he needed to give people a reason to vote Conservative. Look, fair enough. Like I say, you know, that creates all sorts of a battle about what being more Conservative looks like. And then Matt Dormer, who was the council leader at Redditch, came out and said, I don't blame Rishi Sunak in any way, shape or form. He's a fantastic Prime Minister. And then he said, then talking to the plotters directly, he said, we are a team. Start behaving like one. Stop all these shenanigans. Now, apart from the fact that, you know, love a man that uses the word shenanigans for the 6-year psychodrama that the parliamentary plotters have subjected us to, God love him. You know, that's for me when all that kind of air and tension in it started to dissipate. And I thought, you know, this definitely isn't going to crystallize into a challenge because on a local election, it starts from the ground up and they use the anger and the ire of all those lost council seats to say, look, our members want it. Our lost councillors want it. We're doing it for the good of the Conservative Party as a whole. So I think Rishi Sunak probably owes both of those men a phone call, partly to apologise, but also to say thank you. Yeah. And also significantly, now bear in mind that, you know, Con Home, which is the sort of online, you know, in-house magazine, if you like, for Conservative Party, is mainly read and, you know, responded to by kind of real hardline Conservative members, as it were, the sort of people that absolutely voted for Liz Truss over Rishi Sunak. A poll from them going into the local elections showed that 60% backed Sunak's continued leadership. And even Dame Andrea Jenkins, you know, chief outrider bar Nadine Dorries for Boris Johnson, said, you know, we're making do with what we've got. So I think that, you know, there was very little, you know, I think even, you know, this bunch of, you know, ferrets in a sack just thought, you know what, there just isn't enough in it for us to go for it. So it was always going to take something really dramatic for them to go over the top. And there's been so much pressure on them internally not to do it. So, but it did, for me, it dissipated yesterday with those councillors.
And that's so fascinating because in terms of the councillors saying such things, such supportive things of Rishi Sunak, is that something that can be enforced by a sort of CCHQ discipline? Or actually, would you say that that is a genuine feeling from them saying, look, it's not his fault. Maybe there's been a load of other stuff in the build up to him and the shenanigans. But they've said that because they wanted to say that. Is that fair to say?
100%. Anyone that's ever worked in or around the Conservative Party will tell you that Conservative councillors, Conservative associations do what they like and say what they like. It's not a top-down structure, if you like.
Yeah.
It's a Conservative, Conservative associations run their own fiefdoms, if you like, which causes all sorts of problems sometimes. But no one is sitting on these people and telling them what to say.
Interesting. Yeah, I think as well, when you talk about, Dame Andrea Jenkins, was in all the reporting today because she was like the first person to go public with the fact she put a letter of no confidence in ages ago, all of that sort of stuff. So I'm beginning to think, and by the way, my favourite detail of this from the Times reporting on the rebels was that they ended up in the pub on Friday before midday is when they went to the pub and they were like, oh, sack it, we're not going to bother, and they threw the towel in. Now, is that because... I mean, we've talked about them kind of feeling like there's no appetite for it. But on the kind of flip of that, are they feeling at peace? Are they feeling placated by the situation? Because I'm wondering if their frustration will show itself in any other way that isn't a confidence challenge. Because there's an argument to suggest that malaise could spread, they become completely disengaged, that actually they become unhelpful almost with lethargy. Is that possible? It's not as if he's reached out with a kind of cozy, warm hug to the rebels, it would seem, from the outside. But maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, no, they're absolutely not at peace. And malaise has already spread and they're already causing problems by apathy. I mean, who would be a government whip right now trying to get people to turn out for votes? Local rebels going, make me. What are you going to do? It's still not a party at peace with itself. And whilst there's been enough pressure applied on them to not go over the top, as it were, continued pressure needs to be applied to them to now actually row in behind and make the best fist of it, not sit on the sidelines and grumble and say, it's the best we've got, and snipe, etc. from on the sidelines. Actually, try and take the fight to Labour, and... Obviously, it was a terrible, terrible night for the Conservatives. Obviously, it was a great night for Labour. I mean, they managed to pick up, when we're still talking about mayorals, they managed to pick up York and North Yorkshire, which in any normal course of events absolutely would have been a Conservative win in a normal electoral cycle.
It includes Sunak's constituency, doesn't it?
It does indeed, Richmond. So it's a pretty kind of true blue part of the world. So that would have given them cheer. East Midlands, securing East Midlands, Clare Ward would have given them cheer. Obviously managing to beat Jamie Driscoll, the old Corbynite ex-Labour candidate, in the northwest. I'm getting quite tired and confused myself now.
No, that's all right. So that was the northeast, wasn't it, where Kim McGuinness, the Labour candidate,
yes,
beat Jamie Driscoll.
Yeah, northeast. And then obviously, Liverpool, Steve Rotherham, Andy Burnham, none of that's a surprise. So ones that you expect, fine, but the ones that will have really pleased them, I think, will have been York and North Yorkshire, and East Midlands and the North East. So those are all the sorts of places they should be winning. Against that, they didn't take Harlow. Keir Starmer was there a couple of days ago saying these are the sorts of places we should be winning on a path to electoral victory, and they didn't take it. So it was good, but it wasn't stellar. And if you look at those results, yes, the Conservatives lost almost 500 seats, but Labour only gained 184. The big pickup was, the Liberal Democrats picked up 102. I think the Greens picked up 73 and assorted kind of independent councillors picked up 93. So it's not all a quick read across from Conservatives to Labour. And obviously, the great pollster guru that is Sir John Curtis was saying that
Legend.
Indeed, we heart Sir John Curtis, almost.
Yes.
As much as we heart Chris Mason. So Sir John Curtis was saying that in areas where there is a significant Muslim population, 10%, 1 in 10 of the population are Muslim, the Labour vote has gone down significantly, you know, 7 to 8 points. And in some places, that has cost them quite dearly. So actually, that was the kind of other story of the night, was how much Keir Starmer's stance on Gaza has hurt them. Now you've got George Galloway's party back in the frame. Will that start to eat away on the left in the same way that Reform is eating away on the right? So, you know, Labour has really underplayed the kind of Gaza impact for now. But I think I'm reminded from a few months ago, was it the Times that wrote a story? There's 36 general election seats where the Muslim population, you know, if it continues to vote against Labour, could cause them real problems. And bear in mind, ultimately, you've still got to get a 12.5-point swing. We're talking about Tony Blair 1997 territory just to secure a majority of one for Labour. So it's look, unquestionably, it's a great night for Labour, but it's not stellar. And when Starmer talks about no room for complacency, results like this would underscore that for me. They're not, you know, seismic. They're not groundbreaking. Those votes against the Conservative Party are dissipating across the piece.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Let me tell you about the Resident Hotel, where I just stayed. That's right, I have been to the Resident in Liverpool for a lovely, lovely stay. I have to be honest, it was wonderful. And I'm not just saying that. I promise you it was great. The warmest of welcome from the lovely reception team, including a lovely welcome card signed by Megan and the Resident team. We were offered a map. We were offered guidance on where to go for food and for drinks. The location was great. We had several activities in Liverpool. We had a friend's birthday dinner. Then we were bowling, we were doing all of that stuff, and all of it was within a 10-minute walk of where the hotel was, which was perfect. Not only that, we had guidance on the best local restaurants and bars where we could also get discounts as a result of staying at the Resident. The little kitchen in the hotel room was very, very helpful for coffee drinkers. Unbelievably, I'm not one. There's a little coffee machine right there as well. Do you know what was lovely as well? City centre location. Double glazing. There was the outdoor window, then an indoor window. No noise. I slept like an actual log. Beautiful room, very spacious, well equipped, lovely hotel, lovely staff, lovely location. Take this as a personal endorsement. I've been there, done that, and you should do the same. Stay at the Resident. One of the takes that has stuck in my mind is from Beth Rigby, who's Sky News political editor, who said, this was comparing to the kind of the demise of the Tories under John Major in anticipation and sort of getting ready for that 97 Blair landslide. And she said that the Tories are definitely kind of echoing the dying days of the Major administration and the local election result and the feeling in the party and all of that. That seems like almost parallel. But Labour are not replicating the same feeling of a surge or a wave that Tony Blair did. So while the Tories are replicating that moment from history, that Labour still have quite a bit of work to do, actually, in order to achieve what you just said, that sort of landslide to even carry them one into a majority. And I thought that was quite interesting because the comparison is often too easy to make to that Major Blair 97 handover. And it's funny that the Tories are on track and Labour just haven't quite sealed the deal yet, which is something that you will have heard on this podcast for many, many months now, actually, Kirsty, because you've been saying that people aren't, they're not at the finish line with Sir Keir Starmer at this point.
Not at all, but not necessary either, perhaps. You know, as again I've said before, you know, all you need to do is open the Labour manifesto and it say, we're not the Conservatives, and that should be enough. Now, you know, look, obviously if you want to be the Prime Minister, you want people to buy into your vision. You want people to vote for you positively rather than just because, you know, you're not the, you know, knackered old Conservative Party. But nevertheless, a win is a win, right? And once you're in, you're, you know, you can shape and do. And, you know, hopefully if you've made such a great first term out of it, people will positively vote for you. But right now, no, the reality is they'll vote for Labour in large chunks because they're not the Conservatives, not because they are Labour.
Can I ask a question that is not meant to be sort of pejorative? And it is the following. If
you may.
If Rishi Sunak is considered to be safe from the kind of rebellion, as we've discussed, if it's kind of decided even now that Keir Starmer still has quite a lot of work to do, does anyone remember these local election results in 2 weeks' time? Or does the circus move on and we go, right, okay, that was a moment that sort of helped us reset our reporting, our conversations about this, and perhaps has helped the party strategize. But do we talk about these local elections again in a few weeks' time?
Oh, Christ, no. No, look, the political caravan moves on really, really quickly, you know, particularly when it's not seismic. All of this, so in some ways, all of this was all baked in.
Classic.
So when it plays out the way that everyone expected it to, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't change the dial in any way, shape or form because everyone, oh, it's going to be a terrible night for the Tories. Oh, it was a terrible night for the Tories. And so it rolls on. What sticks in the mind in politics and the thing that is harder to roll on from really quickly are the shocks, you know. Liz Truss's fantastic budget, things like that. You know, we'll be talking about that in, you know, 5, 6, 10 years' time. You know, it's those things that are, that are A, very, very terrible and B, unforeseen. Those are the things that tend to stick and things that are weirdly kind of totemic or tin-eared. Those are the sorts of things that hold the public imagination. This, no, we probably won't be talking about this in a couple of weeks. And look, if I had some, again, unasked for advice for Rishi Sunak, I think I've sort of said over the last couple of weeks, we've seen a different kind of Rishi Sunak in the last couple of weeks, almost as if he's thought, you know what, you know, if it's coming to an end, I'm going to do what I want to do, not what I think is going to please the party or appease this rump or that faction or this group of ferrets over here. I'm just going to do what I think is right for the country, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, you know, look, a bit more of that, right? You are now, barring unforeseen circumstances, you are now untouchable by your party. You know, they've taken their last kind of threat and bottled it yet again. So this is it. Between now and, you know, October, November, this is yours to do with what you will. You know, everybody and his wife thinks you're going to lose. So just do what you think is right.
Yeah.
You know, free yourself up from the burden of expectation and let's have a little bit more of what we've seen over the last 2 or 3 weeks because it feels just, yeah, it feels like kind of Rishi Sunak unleashed a bit. And I think, you know, if you can, rather than get hooked into that mindset of, oh, you know, now we're in with a chance. Look, you're probably not, again, barring some unforeseen circumstances. The polls are still the polls. And, you know, the read across from last night doesn't really work because, like I say, there's too many other, you know, parties involved and people vote in a much more binary way in a general election. So the polls are still, you know, by and large, Labour's a 20 points ahead, don't concentrate on the polls and think, well, can we narrow them? And is there a world where? Don't do any of that. Just do what you think is right. Don't look at the polls. Don't obsess about leader columns. Just, you know, do what you think is right for the next few months. And that's it, you know. And that's not about storing up your legacy. That's just, you know, you wanted to be the prime minister. You know, you are now in a position to actually just do one of the few things that, you know, people really get the chance to do, which is be, you know, pretty much unfettered by any kind of concerns of victory or challenge. So go for it.
Yeah, I find that actually that's quite the punchy thing, that this could really be a new lease of life, because it has put the rebels at bay. It has taken that risk away. He's got past the only electoral test that he will face between now and the general election. I know there have been a string of by-elections and all of that up until now, but this was the big one. So he's passed that. It's bad. Could have been worse, but it was bad. But it's just fascinating that all of that together, well, actually, he could wake up on Monday morning and go, right, here we go. I'm re-energized. I'm ready to rock. You know, we've got over the hurdles. Let's give it some time to, you know, get the planes off to Rwanda, to get inflation even more under control, to get to let people feel the difference. I think that's a really interesting consequence of these local elections that perhaps has been under-discussed at this point. This could be a new lease of life.
Yeah, it could be. Look, it could be and it should be, but let's not oversell the consequence of that.
Yep.
We're not talking about a new lease of life that is going to create the, you know, the greatest comeback since Lazarus. We're talking about, you know, a new lease of life for a prime minister who's been, you know, hobbled and highbound for so long by kind of ridiculous, ungovernable, you know, pygmies on his back benches, just not letting him, you know, do anything, and constantly living with this sort of Damocles hanging over his head from his own party. Now is your chance to, you know, to just do it. And like I say, not because you're, you know, convincing yourself of a win, but just because, you know, you've earned the right now to say, right, you know, you lot can all shut up, get behind me, take the fight to Labour, you know, and let's go. If we're going to go out, let's go out, you know, united and doing the right thing for people. Because, frankly, we've all put up for too long with the Tories obsessing about the Tories.
Yeah.
And it would just be really nice if they could just concentrate on the party that, you know, the country that they're supposed to be governing, and concentrate on trying to do some right things by the voters for a few months, as opposed to just endlessly backbiting, bitching and plotting against each other. Just enough already.
Yeah. Just as we conclude, actually, the podcast, at just gone 3 o'clock on Saturday, the 4th of May, some breaking news. Oh, which Kirsty's getting a call about. No, Labour's Andy Burnham has been re-elected as the Mayor of Greater Manchester. Hold the front page. What a shocking surprise that is. But then the other thing here, actually, just as the numbers continue to sort of tumble in for Sadiq Khan in London, Robert Colville tweeted the following. Worth pointing out that winning the London mayoral race by 10 points, which is John Curtis's projection, when your party is 26 points ahead nationally and 34 points ahead in your city, according to YouGov, Robert Colville says that would be an utterly terrible performance. Utterly awful is, in fact, the word he uses, which is, you know, that's something perhaps for the wash-up of a Sadiq Khan result. What are you thinking?
Yeah, he's right. Look, Khan has been cut down to size by a weird alliance of the hard left and white van man in greater London suburbs, basically. This is much as has been seen across the piece over the last couple of days. This has been a protest. It's not a ringing endorsement of the brilliant candidate that is Susan Hall. This is about, you know, ULEZ for Greater London White Van Man, and it's about Gaza and Palestine for the hard left, for the Muslim population. And this is what we're seeing here. And just as Labour lost control of Oldham because of Gaza, and just because, you know, Sunak almost was in 117 votes of coming third to reform in the Black Blackpool South by-election, this has been a couple of nights of protest right across the piece, basically. On the left, you know, the message for Stump from the left is we want you to be more Labour. The message to Sunak from the right is we want you to be more Conservative. And the message to, you know, Khan from the left and the right is we don't like you. So, you know.
It's pretty punchy.
Well, but it is, but it's true. He's, not a very popular mayor, is he? And as I said, you know, he's got a half decent Conservative candidate. We might be having a different conversation, but he's a hugely unpopular mayor, and you know, like I say, ULEZ has got, you know, a lot to do with that. And this is a protest election across the piece. And just before we go, Callum, can I just draw your attention to something very interesting that has caught my eye over the last couple of days whilst we've all been obsessing about the local elections. And this is this story about asylum seekers going to Ireland. And all of a sudden, Dublin's got a huge problem with people leaving the UK and going to Ireland because they're worried about Rishi Sunak's Rwanda policy and being deported to Rwanda. And so we had this very cheeky, I think it was meant to be cheeky, offer to Dublin about, well, you can join our Rwanda scheme if you like, which obviously was rejected out of hand. But it does make me think that there is a world now where Ireland, of course, which is still in EU, and when we left the European Union under Boris's Brexit deal, one of the consequences of that was we left the Dublin Agreement, which means that we have no legal ability to return people that come over on the Channel to France. This is why we can't deport them back to France, because we're out of this Dublin Agreement. And technically, if we put them back on boats and sent them to France, we would be kidnapping them in the eyes of the law, which is why we're at the moment looking to return them to a third country, because we cannot legally return them to the country that they came from, which in this case is France. But here is the potential of a scenario that you begin to see working out here. And it's interesting either for Rishi Sunak or for Starmer, who, by the way, has talked a lot about getting more returns agreements as being the way of tackling these boats coming over the Channel. If the problem for Dublin becomes really quite substantial, there is a world where Dublin, as an EU member, begins to put pressure on France to come up with a returns agreement so that it takes the pressure off them from this great big swathe of asylum seekers going over to Dublin because they're frightened about being sent to Rwanda. So it is an interesting new twist in the old Rwanda plot that actually, weirdly, it might play out in a way that it works, but not in the way that was intended, if it creates pressure on France to have a returns agreement with Britain. And we're a long way down the road from that happening yet, but you can see a world where that might happen, and that is fascinating to me.
Kirsty, thank you very much. I've enjoyed this weekend edition of Whitehall Sources. It's been very fun to nerd out about the local elections over the last little while, and we'll see what all the implications and repercussions are for the weeks ahead. Thank you for listening to Whitehall Sources. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. It's completely free, and you'll get every single episode as it drops into your feed, taking you inside politics at Westminster to analyse it with people like Kirsty, who have lived it, who know it, and who can offer their expertise on it. We will talk to you again soon.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for ways to win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.